Andrea Garcia, and she is a senior policy analyst at the American Medical Association with the Health and Science Strategy Team. And with that team, she develops policy positions on a wide array of public health issues and supports the AMA's federal and state advocacy initiatives. And prior to joining the AMA, she was the director of state health policy at ASTO.
Thanks, Lainey. So today I'm going to talk about how state legislatures responded to some of the recent infectious disease outbreaks. I have no relationships to disclose. So as you all know, Ebola hit the United States in late 2014. We all know these facts about what happened. I'm just highlighting this so you can understand the timeline and some of the jurisdictions, because that'll tie back to what we see in the legislatures. So September, the first laboratory confirmed case of Ebola in Texas. Later in October, two healthcare workers who treated the index patient tested positive for Ebola. And then at the end of the month, we saw the medical worker who returned from Guinea test positive in New York City. So while I was at ASTO, we developed a state legislative and regulatory prospectus every year. We would survey the state health agency legislative liaisons to hear what was happening in their legislature, what issues were percolating to the top, and what they expected to be the health agency's priorities going into the legislative session. This is around this time every year, so last year at this point, we were hearing about the informational sessions that state legislatures were having about the health department's ability to respond to infectious disease outbreak. We were hearing about movement and monitoring policies, state-level funding, and a number of other protections that may come up. What we didn't hear about was measles, because it was November when we put that out. And then, of course, in January, as Matthew mentioned, we started hearing about the cases in California, which eventually led to 189 people from 24 states and DC being reported to have measles. So by March, this is the ASTO State Public Health blog, we were talking about Ebola and measles and the fact that we expected states to address gaps and strengthen their laws so we wouldn't see future threats. So what did we actually end up seeing during the 2015 state sessions? I'm going to start out talking about Ebola. Texas had the most comprehensive law, and it was focused on infectious disease, not specifically Ebola. But it was addressing many of the gaps that they saw in their response effort. So they were going to create a declaration of a state infectious disease emergency. They were going to grant the state health official with authority over public health policy and procedures related to disease control measures. They addressed everything from testing an animal. You may remember the nurse who had a dog who was exposed. They had that in their piece of legislation, stockpiling personal protective equipment, evaluating options to treat medical waste, which I know was a big issue that many states dealt with. What I have highlighted in bold is what actually was enacted in the state. So they ended up establishing a task force on infectious disease preparedness and giving them authority to enter into contracts to help facilities prepare to respond to infectious disease emergencies. So what was enacted in some of the other states? We saw a lot of legislation around authority of the health department or the governor. Florida passed a law to authorize the Department of Health to declare, enforce, modify, or abolish isolation orders. And South Dakota strengthened their contagious disease statute, which was focused almost solely on TB, so they broadened it to include MERS, SARS, viral hemorrhagic fevers, and other contagious diseases. In Minnesota, funding was a big issue. They have the largest Liberian population in the United States, so funding was important to help address the needs of the health department in planning, coordination, preparation, and response activities. In New York, we saw a statute related to protection for healthcare workers. They passed a healthcare worker bill of rights to encourage people to take a leave of absence to go fight Ebola overseas and provide them with employee protections. Minnesota looked at but didn't pass a law that would have provided employees complying with isolation and quarantine with certain protections, such as preventing employers from discharging the employee or allowing them to work from home. And then California and Oklahoma specifically looked at hospital preparedness, which was also another big issue, as you know. So California requiring protection from occupational exposure by providing PPE, and Oklahoma looked at requiring hospitals to verify annually to the Commissioner of Health that they have negative pressure rooms and are equipped to control the spread of infectious disease. None of those passed. So let's switch gears a little bit and talk about what we saw in response to measles and immunization legislation. These were some of the broad trends, so eliminating religious or personal belief exemptions, adding religious or personal belief exemptions, strengthening the administrative requirements for non-medical exemptions, requiring schools to report vaccination rates publicly, and then requiring parental notification if any non-immunized students are in attendance at a school or a daycare. So this was the 2014 status. I just want to point this out because, as Matthew mentioned, Mississippi and West Virginia were the only states with a medical-only exemption. Going into 2015 sessions, we saw 7 states look at eliminating the religious exemption and 6 states look at eliminating their personal belief exemption. California and Vermont, as Matthew mentioned, were the two that enacted laws eliminating an exemption. California's received a lot of attention because this meant they were joining Mississippi and Vermont as the only 3 states who do not allow for a religious exemption. It's medical only. In 2015, we also saw a number of states looking to add exemptions, and many of these bills were pre-filed before the outbreak was taking place. So a lot of these bills died very quickly. None of them ended up passing. West Virginia and Mississippi are of note just because they were the two who only had medical, and they both were thinking of adding an exemption in 2015. So in terms of strengthening the requirements for a religious exemption, and Matthew talked about this, a lot of times it's notarizing a form or requiring education and having a physician sign off on the fact that the person is aware of the risks and benefits of vaccines. So Connecticut, Delaware, and Illinois all strengthened requirements for religious exemptions in 2015. I just want to end by noting that the AMA updated its policy at our annual meeting in June of 2015. So our policy now says that we support legislation eliminating all non-medical immunizations or exemptions from immunizations. So going forward, we're going to be supporting state medical societies in their efforts to eliminate non-medical exemptions. And I will end there.